Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The last local election cycle brought a number of new faces to Charlotte City Council. Three of those new faces are with us this hour. District 3's Joyce Mayo, District 5's J.D. Mazura Arias, and Kimberly Owens, who represents District 6. All are Democrats. All campaigned on keeping communities safe, on improving the supply of affordable housing, and on transportation improvements. Those are three things previous councils have worked on diligently with various degrees of success. Even with the best of intentions, campaign promises are often difficult to achieve, and we were wondering if the reality of being on council has in any way diminished the stars in the eyes of these new council members. We'll explore that this hour along with several other topics. Welcome to you all. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Thank you. Before we begin this conversation, I need to mention that WFAE's Julian Berger is J.D. Mazura Arias' partner. However, Julian, is not involved in any of the station's coverage of Charlotte City Council. So I know each of you ran. You spent lots of time talking when you were running about what you would accomplish, what you wanted to accomplish. But if a voter was not in your district, they probably weren't paying a lot of attention to what you were having to say. But you're representing all of the city, including your district. So I want to hear from each of you about who you are in a thumbnail. And I'll start with you, Joy.
Good morning, Mike. So Joy Mayo, now representing District 3 for Charlotte City Council. So I'm a former CMS teacher, taught middle school math and social studies for about 11 years. Neighborhood leader, really cracked down with my HOA president and keeping corporate landlords out of our neighborhoods. And we'll bring that same intentionality as a representative for District 3. So excited to work with y'all. And now I work at an environmental nonprofit. So we'll bring that environmental lens as well.
JD?
Thanks, Mike. I'm JD, son of East Charlotte. So I was born in Colombia, South America, but been in East Charlotte since 2001, grew up here. I've had over a decade of experience in activism, political organizing, political campaigns, public policy, as well as government affairs. And so most recently, I was in New York City working for a think tank and going to grad school and then moved back to the city of Charlotte to give back to my community, very focused in a people first approach, as well as centering the rights of immigrants in our communities, not only in District 5, but across the entire city of Charlotte.
Kimberly.
Yeah. Hey, Mike. It's nice to be on again. I am primarily an attorney and a mom. I've been living in Charlotte since 1994. I am still a practicing attorney. My children now are young adults, and I look at the city through their eyes. I like to consider myself a storyteller and a problem solver, and those are two skills that I really did bring to the campaign and that I hope to bring up here. I love to elevate the stories, particularly District 6, because it is not a monolith. There is an image of District 6 that I think precedes it in conversations, and I want to disabuse people of the notion that District 6 doesn't have a vibrant, diverse group of folks in it, all of whom have very similar needs to other areas of the city.
All we have at-large members of City Council, and we have district members of City Council. You all three represent individual districts, but council votes on things that affect everybody. And I'm just curious how you will approach certain decisions if something looks good for the city but maybe negatively impacts your district. Are you there to serve those interests, or will you capitulate to the whole and vote for something that will affect the city positively as a whole? JD, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. It's a tough balancing act, but ultimately, the voters of District 5 voted for me, right? And so for me, the interest of District 5 constituents will be the priority. And I think it's all about making sure you're communicating what's happening on council to your constituents. I think oftentimes we are seen as something separate or something that's not accessible. I campaign on this, do a really good job in communicating what's coming ahead to the citizens of Charlotte. And so for me, if those things conflict, the interest city and the interest of District 5, it is on me as a city council member representing East Charlotte to ensure that there is accessibility, transparency, and communication throughout the process.
Kimberly, same question.
Yeah, I would agree with that and just amplify it. I think for me, the math that I will do will always favor the interests of District 6. But as I said in my opening, I don't think that the interests of District 6 are that different than the interests of the breadth of Charlotte. I think that drawing those two interests together, and as JD said, explaining to people what it is that we are deciding and why it is that we see that there are some distinctions perhaps that can be made. But I have a great deal of faith and confidence in the people in District 6 to be able to understand hard issues. If I communicate them, I can explain to them where they may have a difference of opinion, but how we can perhaps get to a solution that dovetails more with everyone's best interest. So I'm excited about those possibilities, but I do appreciate the question that there are going to be times when there is a bit of a perception of disconnect.
Joy, anything to add to that?
No, I very much agree with everything JD and Kimberly said as well. I do agree part of that is being on council, is having difficult conversations with residents, business owners, and different stakeholders. When, you know, what we're thinking maybe doesn't align and having those conversations. And I think part of that is being honest with people, reminding them that we're representing our district, which will be our main priority, but also the city of Charlotte. So I think first being ready and invested in having those conversations is imperative because we do represent our district and the residents. So I think they should be our primary focus, having those conversations, but then also explaining why we may vote one way or the other.
The three of you are joining a council that went through some pretty tough times, as did the city at large in 2025, the stabbings on the Blue Line and the decision to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to a former police chief to settle a suit that had not even been brought, more money to pay a settlement to the new police chief's husband and more. And that has called into question whether there may be deep-seated problems within the city and, by extension, the council and how both entities do business. Some believe that we have a structural problem with city government, that perhaps we are operating as though it's still 1980 or 1990, but the city has grown so large. We have a part-time council. We have a part-time mayor. Maybe things have, and you guys run every 2 years. You're in office for a year. You have to start running again. Perhaps we should rethink all of this. What's your take on that, Kim?
That's a loaded question. I think there's a lot to unpack there. You know, the number of things that you described as controversies facing city council and the feelings that that leaves our citizens with, you know, that was front of mind and why I ran. You know, I think it was a lot of that energy that, gosh, it's just a clown car up there, that really made me think, well, you know, let me give it a try, because this feels like it doesn't work. And I think you and I had talked about when I was on your show the other time was around how instilling the citizens of Charlotte with a sense of confidence in government was a major priority of mine. So all that said, you know, the second part of your question around some of the structural things that we may need to do to be able to really, you know, uplift the importance of this job, you know, I'm open to all of that. You know, I am working as a full-time attorney. In addition to this, JD has a job. Everybody's sort of got a number of side hustles and jobs because this job is not really full-time as you described. So I think I'm open to all of that, but I would say first and foremost, we just need to be better at communication. I never ascribe malice where a simple failure of communication would fit. And so a lot of those things you described at the top of your question are things where I don't think it was malice. I think it's just a failure of communication.
Joy?
I do think there are a lot of things to think about, just talking to past or current city council reps, but there just seems to be a breakdown of communication sometimes with the manager and staff, with city council members, and people maybe hearing about things right before there's a vote. Taking part, that's something that I will really be kind of challenging the manager and other people to really make sure that we're in the conversations as staff is kind of working on things so that we're not blindsided. We need to make sure that we're representing our district and the residents. And in order to be effective, I need to be there in some of those conversations early on before we're just making a decision.
She brings up an interesting point, JD. Many times this council in the past year or two has claimed to be kind of caught off guard by things that have already been decided by city management, but it is the council who hires and fires the city top-level city employees. Is it deliberate? Are they trying to pull a fast one on you? Because a lot of decisions are made, we have to do it now, which makes for bad decision-making. Is it deliberate? Is it just a bad style of communication? What's going on here? I know you've only been on council for 6 weeks, but what's your impression?
I mean, it's something I ran on, right, is making sure that we have a city government that works for the people of Charlotte, not the other way around. And I think that kind of falls in line similarly with council and the city manager. And to your point, Mike, that you made earlier, I do think it's a structural and internal processing issue. I think we are still operating, as you said, like we're in the 1990s and we're still operating as if we are not seeing nearly 150 people move every day to the city of Charlotte, Mecklenburg County area. You know, this job is demanding. We all have different jobs. We all have different priorities. We are part of different committees, and we can only do so much to ensure that there is communication. And so for me, what that looks like is thinking differently and creatively about how we are structuring council, how we're communicating with the city manager, how we're communicating with city staff, you know, how many committees are there? And I think this is something I've spoken to a lot of council members. This requires for a council to be a full-time council. We're the 14th largest city in the country. And we're one of the few that has a part-time position. I will say this, you know, I've spoken to other colleagues and council members in Philly, Nashville, New York City, and these are full-time jobs because they require full-time attention and diligence to the issues that are facing the residents. And so I agree with you. I think it's a structural and internal processing challenge rather than one that is made out of malice intent like Councilwoman Owens mentioned.
And yet we seem to have a transparency problem within the city. It's often very difficult for individual citizens, including members of the media, to get information that is deemed to be public information. It takes an inordinate amount of time in many cases, and in many cases the foot dragging just goes on and on and on. Is this on your radar, Joy?
I do think that's an interesting question. I think that's important I understand the city receives a lot of requests for information, but I do wonder how can we be more effective? I mean, I think using technology maybe could speed some of that processes up. And so I think those are some questions. I think that staff and council have to be open to doing things differently. It can't just be the status quo. The way that technology has evolved, I think that we maybe need to move a little differently as technology has changed. So I do think that's something I've noticed just on council the last 6 weeks is that maybe being a bit more flexible and pivoting when necessary. As a former teacher, I'm used to having to do that in real time as, you know, I'm in the middle of a lesson. You may see something is just going over someone's head and you may have to pull someone in a small group. And I do think that's something that I will be challenging staff.
There are some legal implications of involved in transparency on certain things, and we have a lawyer on the panel here, Kimberly Owens. So when we come back from the break, I want to talk about the legal aspects of this and to JD about something that he's taken the bull by the horns here. He's taken a step of his own, and we'll talk about that in a moment at Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcltregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE in Hickory. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with three brand-new members, newly minted members of Charlotte City Council. Joy Mayo represents District 3, J.D. Mazur-Arias, District 5, Kimberly Owens, District 6. Before the break, we were talking about the apparent problem, the perception of a problem of with transparency that the city has demonstrated and the city council has demonstrated over the last year or so. A state audit criticized the city for how it handled the settlement with the police chief, particularly with regard to closed sessions and disclosure, a.k.a. transparency. I know there are legal ramifications of this. There are certain things that cannot be shared because they're personnel matters, etc. Kimberly, you're the attorney on this panel. If you're faced with a similar situation, would you advocate being more open or would you go with the flow? What changes can we make to make this situation less opaque? Because we paid out a significant amount of money to settle disputes this year with people, and we would not know how much money the police chief got had it not been for the fact that he revealed it himself. This is taxpayer money.
Yeah, it definitely is, Mike. But I think there's a wide swath of different actions between going with the flow and really agitating for something. I think that the devil's going to be in the details on how we land on various issues. I'm exceedingly impressed with the new city attorney. She does have a deep municipal background, which I do not have. So just in absolute candor, yes, I'm an attorney. I'm a real estate attorney, do a lot of corporate work. I do have some sense of some of the sensitivities that we face. But first and foremost, I'm impressed with the decision-making that has preceded me in terms of hiring someone with that deep well of experience, having worked in municipal government. And I think, my hat is also always off to our local journalists. And I say this not to pander or preen for you, but you guys keep us accountable. And so keep those requests coming in. And I have yet to have an experience up here with the staff where if I have asked for something, they haven't made every effort to try to get it to me. And so, work those relationships as journalists with your city council members and have us goose things if you feel like you're not getting it. You know, where you have an entitlement, it is my absolute commitment that you will get access to information. However, I am going to defer to the judgment so that we don't open ourselves up to unintended consequences with regard to our disclosures, PR issues or, just whatever we need to do for the betterment of the city. I'm going to take the good counsel of the people around me, including our city attorney.
J.D., you took a step just last night. I think around 6 o'clock last night, you released a 4-minute direct-to-the-camera video to your constituents explaining a lot of the things that will be going on tonight at tonight's city council meeting. This is a way, fewer people are using traditional media because they believe we are the enemy of the people. Ridiculous. But fewer people are using it, and this is a way to get directly to them. Is this this was the first time you've done this, I believe. Is this the first of many times in the future, and how effective do you think it will be, and should more council members adopt this Gen X procedure?
Well, fascinating question. I think, first of all, it's not the first time I've done it to communicate to constituents. It is the first time I've done it to communicate what's happening on city council. And we're already doing it. Councilwoman Owens has already posted many videos, right, about explaining her decision-making process towards a vote. I would also mention that I think it's important that, and something I've mentioned to my colleagues on council, why is there this perception disconnect about transparency on city council? It's because we have somehow, some way, on council in the city, a reactive form of messaging and communication. We need to take proactive stances, right? We need to let citizens and our constituents know ahead of time what's coming down the pipeline and hear their concerns from there. Oftentimes, people wake up and the first thing they grab is this, is their iPhone, their cell phone. Let's make sure that we're communicating with folks. And yes, I do think it's an approach that we all should take, communicate, especially as we're engaging young people. I oftentimes think of the 2024 election where my demographic, young Latino men, swing towards the right and voted for Donald Trump. How are we engaging those constituents, that demographic, before, to ensure that they're part of the process? This governing is not just What I decide, what Kimberly decides, what Joy decides, governing is what we all decide as the people. That seat might have a nice little plaque in front of it that says my last name, but ultimately it belongs to the people that voted for me to be in it.
Talk for a minute about the outcome of the recent selection by you folks on council of the mayor pro tem. It used to be, and I don't know that this is written in stone or policy anywhere, but it used to be that the at-large member who got the largest number of votes would automatically get that job. In the last several cycles, that person has been Dimple Ejimera, but council seems set on not awarding her that prize. Last time they gave it to Dante Anderson, who served one term, and this time around they gave it to James Mitchell, who received the third most votes of the four at-large races, I think, maybe third or fourth, and he has routinely had the poorest attendance record. Joy, what's going on here?
I think that's an interesting question. Traditionally, the person who is mayor pro tem traditionally has been the at-large with the most vote getting. I did vote for Dimple, particularly because I do respect that position. In the past, I think that's helpful. I personally think it should be someone at large because I think they have a little bit more time to be thinking about overall and policy decisions. But I mean, I think some of that is just relationships. I think that as we've talked before about council being part-time, it can be challenging to really have some of those, you know, in-depth relationships. Smudgy's been on council for 20 years, and I think that has allowed him to get to know other council members very well, which may have influenced that vote.
This is a completely, what's the word I'm looking for? It's an honorific. There's no power attached to it. They take over for the mayor when the mayor can't be there to run the city council meetings. And maybe there's some other things that the mayor pro tem does behind the scenes. But it also kind of sets people up to become the next mayor. And I don't know that the mayor is going to run again. Let's put it that way. Let's cut to the chase here. Does this set James Mitchell up? Is that why they voted for James Mitchell to be the next mayor of Charlotte, Kimberly?
This is a difficult one for me. As you know, and as anyone who watched can know, I did not vote for Mayor Pro Tem Mitchell. I had some different standards. Perhaps they're not consistent with everybody's, but they were mine. Is I really wanted somebody who I had seen run a tight meeting. I wanted somebody who would keep us on time and on task, because I really think that is a responsibility that we have towards our constituents, particularly if they show up for public forum, that we're not going until all hours on frolic and detour of our minds, and are really staying on task and are able to hear from people. I also ideally would have had somebody who wasn't going to run for mayor. I wanted full focus. And, you know, I said this to numerous people, and so I'll say it here. I actually wanted Ed Driggs. I thought Ed runs some of the tightest meetings I've seen run up here. He keeps us on task. He is very focused. Obviously, I was not going to get a second, let alone the six votes for that because of the party situation. But I think Ed would have been a brilliant choice. Mitchell, I will be honest, I did not vote for it for a large part because I had not seen him run meetings. His health had been an issue last year. So far, I have been impressed. You know, he's been very team oriented and has been trying to really whip us into shape and get us ready for an upcoming retreat where we will focus on our interactions with each other and on the ways that we can do our jobs better. So I keep an open and curious mind. But again, my factors and why I did not vote for either Dimple or Smudgy were simply because I thought they both had an interest in the mayorship. And I was really more inclined towards somebody who didn't.
You mentioned the party situation with Ed Driggs. For people who don't know, Ed Driggs is the only Republican on city council, and in fact, the only Republican in Charlotte-Mecklenburg city and county government. You also mentioned getting along. Somebody who can, you're going on this retreat to talk about council interactions, JD, and there seems to be some political jostling going on among members of council, and has been for a while. District 2 Councilman Malcolm Graham, in the aftermath of that vote for mayor pro tem, said, "At large district, it doesn't matter. What matters is the ability to lead. This community is dying, starving, begging for leadership, from City Council, and he went on to say that Mitchell's appointment will ensure that council's votes are strong in city decisions and don't get drowned out by the mayor's office or city manager. Help me read between the lines, JD.
Wow, you're asking all the tough questions, Mike. I will say this. I think there is not a party tension on council, rather more a priority tension on council. I ran on that, right? I ran with, although I'm not fully anti-development or anti-business or anti-growth, I am people first. And I think the way some other colleagues of mine on council approach that is differently than how I would approach it. So I think the tension really lies on priorities and how much you prioritize business and growth versus right. taking care of people and constituents.
But to say that this community is dying, starving, begging for leadership on council, that's pretty strong. That indicates what he thinks is a serious problem.
And I think it's a problem that we all ran on, right? I think we saw, as we all mentioned, lack of transparency, lack of communication, lack of working together. And I think to a certain extent, Councilmember Graham is right. You know, I think the city of Charlotte wants a champion and champions that are communicating effectively, that are engaging the public in a very well-mannered, and that are ensuring that people are informed of what's happening in our city. And, you know, I read the documents we got on onboarding. My colleagues can know I was kind of sounding the alarm on this throughout. That said, and it's not an ordinance, but that said, that the mayor pro tem should be the at-large candidate, traditionally the at-large candidate with the most votes, right? However, I still agree with Joy that it should have been a at-large member. That being said, I've been impressed because Mayor Pro Tem Mitchell has been able to bring these two conflicting priorities from both sides, right? Those that are a little bit more focused on pro-business and pro-growth, those that are focused on pro-people a little bit more,
yeah.
and coming together and finally having conversations.
So at the very first council meeting back in December that you, when you were sworn in, Joy, you talked about each of you had a moment in the spotlight, and you mm-hmm. talked about wanting to create a city in which every resident can live, work, and play within a 10-minute walk or commute, which will require intentional investment. That 10-minute walk goal has been on the council's radar for a long time. How do you see yourself helping to move more quickly toward achieving that goal?
I think a large part of that is kind of being innovative. So during our last committee meeting for housing, I really liked that conversation about how are we using city-owned properties differently when it comes to potentially affordable housing. I'll be kind of pushing staff to think through how do we create mixed use potentially on some of that city-owned property. When we think of Camp North End, one thing I really like about how that has been developed is there's a section where for artists or business owners, they can live in kind of like an apartment, but also have like a front facing for businesses. How do we think through that with different developments that are ongoing? How do we challenge developers, city staff and county staff to really think outside the box? Just because we haven't done something before in District 3 or District 6 doesn't mean that it can't be done. So I think for me as a former teacher, I'm always thinking of what have our peers done? That's something that I'll come to ask city staff, like what have other cities done that has been successful. So I think really in order to create 10-minute cities, it is about mixed use. How do people not just jump in their cars and drive 20, 30 minutes?
JD, you part of your time on that very first meeting, you used to talk about every decision being made by council beginning with one question. And that question is, how does this help the people who live here today? Is that to say that is not how decisions have been made in the past?
You know, I think my colleagues know that I'm not afraid to be blunt sometimes. And yeah, I largely agree with that sentiment. I think sometimes we are centering business interests more than we are people's interests. I think the city, particularly District 5, in my personal analysis, has not been part of the growth that the entire city has seen. I think that we also have to, Councilwoman Mayo's point, be more intentional and creative about where we're placing multifamily housing, affordable housing, high density housing. These are, you know, we're wanting to grow. It's not to say that we don't want affordable housing or high density housing, but how can developers work with community members, constituents, and neighbors, and ensure they come to a compromise? I think that's, it's all about communicating. It's all about ensuring that how is this working to get people ahead rather than leaving them behind.
Kimberly, both you and JD at that first meeting spoke about being a voice for everybody you represent in your respective districts. And you, of course, everybody knows this by now, at least people in District 6 certainly know it. You knocked out a Republican to win your seat on council. That means that there's only one Republican now on council, Ed Driggs. You took that district seat away from the GOP for the first time in decades, and the person who held your seat prior to leaving for a job in Washington was very vocal, often a contrarian voice on council and kind of a thorn in the mayor's side. Was he speaking for himself, or was he also giving voice to a point of view that is now missing on council? And how do you plan to represent those people who he represented and who did not vote for you?
I appreciate the question, Mike, but I think I'm not going to put myself in former Councilmember Bokhari's headspace. I can't speak to whether he was self-aggrandizing for other positions within some GOP-led administration. I have no idea. I do know that he was responsive to the people of District 6 in a way that I did hear consistently and that I aspire to do as well. You know, I do these Friday morning coffees all over the district, and I try to, you know, set aside a number of hours each week to really hear from people. And, you know, we knocked 15,000 doors all across District 6, and I did talk to people. And I do think that the hallmark of a good representative is really, as JD suggested, is being accessible and responsive to the people, regardless of what their political persuasion. I don't, you know, yes, I am a Democrat, but I am also somebody who's lived in District 6 for 20 some years. And these are my people and these are my neighbors, and I intend to listen to them and amplify their voices.
I don't have time to ask the next question because we're coming up on a break, but JD, you're going to get it, and it has to do with this loss of a Republican voice on council at a time when suddenly there are more registered Republicans in the state of North Carolina than there are registered Democrats. It's a tiny, tiny difference, but nonetheless, a remarkable one. We'll come back. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about public safety, affordable housing, and more with these three recently minted members of Congress, of the City Council. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to three. I can't get my brain into the game this morning, and I apologize. We're talking to three newly minted members of Charlotte City Council: Joy Mayo from District 3, J.D. Mazura Arias in District 5, and Kimberly Owens in District 6. And we were talking about one less Republican voice on council, which leaves one. That's all that's there. And this comes at a time when there are more registered Republicans than Democrats in the state of North Carolina, it's a tiny majority, but it's happened. And some of that trend is driven by something you alluded to a moment ago, JD, and that is young Latinos who voted in large numbers across the country for Donald Trump. With this great divide between left and right, is it possible to represent concerns of both camps effectively, or are we in a blue city in which the majority rules?
I think it is absolutely possible. I think something I've spoken about before is that folks are tired of traditional political parties and party talking points. I ran a campaign solely based on the issues that matter: safety, transparency, jobs, economic development, a government that works for people. I left my ideologies aside, my political party aside. I wanted to focus on these folks. And I oftentimes knocked on doors where Republican voters, you know, wanted to vote for me, or they were unaffiliated, but lean conservative. And I think this is a callback to, we don't really have to focus on whether we're blue or red, but more so of whether our policies actually represent what the people want and what they need. And so I do think that if we continue, hopefully, ideally, I'm a cautious optimist of people first policies, that folks will feel represented regardless of their political party. As I often said, and as Councilwoman Owen said in her remarks when she was first sworn in, we're city government. It's not supposed to be super exciting. it's hard services. You know, it is water, it is sewage, it is CMPD, it's fire department, it is housing, it is jobs and economic growth. It should not be political. This is by far the least political job we should have. And we've seen that with our council, because again, we're not split based on political parties. We're split based on priorities.
It's the nitty gritty. City government and county government is the nitty gritty. It's where the rubber meets the road for most people, literally and figuratively. All three of you made public safety a campaign issue. And we all know about the light rail stabbings in August and December. We know about the shootings in various places around town, particularly uptown. Yet CMPD has used the word perception when they talk about public safety, that the public has the perception that the city is not safe. Of course, perception is reality. Joy, in your mind, in your opinion, what is the reality?
The reality is that people often are not feeling safe in Charlotte. And I think that that's something that all of us are going to have to work on. So first, you know, as we have a new police chief, I'm very excited about, how do we get rid of all our vacancies, right? How do we fill those positions so that we can more rapidly respond to 911 calls? I love the thought that the city has now also of traffic police to help, or traffic. And that's important so that our police officers aren't just having to go to traffic stops or accidents. So I think, how can we continue to think outside of the box until we're at 100%? So that we can really meet with residents. But I think just continuing to collaborate with the city and the county. From what I've heard, that they're really, the relationship between the new city manager and the county manager is really improving. And I'm really hoping that continues some of those conversations, because we know it's not just what's going on with the city. It's also access to mental health and different things like that. So how are we collaborating as a local government, city and county, to meet the needs of our residents? And I think it's multifaceted. So bringing all the stakeholders to the table was essential.
Yesterday, the Charlotte Observer reported that police data shows that killings in Charlotte are down by about 12%. There were 97 killings in Charlotte in 2025. One's too many, but 95 is less than the 110 that came along in 2024. Kimberly, what do you take from that?
Well, I think it does go back to that comment around perception. And I met so many people in District 6 who really have a very small engagement with our city because they do fear for their safety. And so a lot of folks will just stay in District 6, and they're missing on so many wonderful opportunities for the richness of our city. And I do want to drive folks to an appreciation that those numbers are very positive for a city our size. We really are a very safe city. All that said, I also want to broaden the lens on safety, and it not just be crime, but also some of our, you know, our Vision Zero report just came out, and some of our, you know, street risk that folks take either in cars or on bicycles or pedestrians. I mean, some of those numbers are up. Let's look at safety holistically and not just focus on crime. I do agree, though, that we do need to be consistent in communications and in communicating in ways that do not talk down to people and do not make people feel as though they are being, are being maligned for having legitimate concerns.
Murder is declining in most major cities around the country, despite what we have been told by some politicians. And you have to understand, I think, the reason why things happen before you can truly address them. So, JD, what do you see as the crux of Charlotte's and this country's violent crime problem? Because murders may be down, but there's still things going on that are not, that are undesirable. Is it lax punishment? Is it poor policing? Is it a system that lets too many dangerous people out on the streets while they await trial? Is it a societal problem? What is it?
I think it's a capacity problem. I think we do not have enough funding to sustain our wraparound services. I think ultimately we have to also look at our state legislature, who is still the only state in the country that has not passed the state budget. I think there is a lack of priority and intentionality about what public safety looks like rather other than violent crime. I also think it is providing support. There of right now, lack of support to folks that are dealing with mental health crises. I also think it comes down to ensuring that we go back to making sure that our men and women in uniform focus on the job that they signed up to do, rather than having them be spread thin and having to deal with so much other things. And that comes with funding and sustaining and building up wraparound services that support our men and women in uniform, rather than looking to them to do that job on top of the other jobs that they're doing.
It sounds very much, Joy, like what we've asked teachers to do over the years. They do a lot more than just teach. They didn't sign up for
that.
Yeah, they didn't sign up for a lot of the things that they have been asked to do. Are you on the same page with JD there?
I am. I mean, I believe it's a hard job for our police officers now in Charlotte, particularly when I talk to them and when I talk to business owners. I'm hearing a lot about the unhoused population, you know, feeling like they're just moving them from one area to another area, and that we're really not getting to the root cause, in that they're offering services and support, but people aren't taking it. So really trying to figure out, you know, like JD said, those wraparound services, but how do we make it attractive to people? Are we really having conversations about why people are in some of the situations? But yeah, it does sound a lot like teachers.
Yep. Both of the alleged perpetrators of the stabbings on light rail face both federal and state trial charges and trials. And key members of Charlotte and Mecklenburg government, including the interim CEO of CATS, have been summoned to Raleigh this month to testify about what is or is not being done to keep Charlotte safe and public transit safe. Kimberly, if you are among that group of people heading to Raleigh, what would you be prepared to tell them?
I'd be prepared to amplify some of the stories. As I said, I like to see myself as a problem solver and a storyteller. And I think stories are really what resonates with people. I think the stories of our citizens in Charlotte and their experiences are really what Raleigh needs to appreciate. I think we need to just move on past this divide between urban and rural and really get to a point where we are focused on what is best for the entirety of North Carolina. When Charlotte succeeds, I believe the whole state succeeds. We are a huge driver of the economic performance of this state. And I'd like to see some degree of appreciation for the fact that we are growing. We are growing at a pace that exceeds that of our rural counterparts. We have needs that differ in many respects from our rural counterparts. And we deserve, I believe, adequate funding and representation to meet those challenges.
We just voted on whether or not to raise sales tax for transit. We said yes. The legislature gave us the opportunity to do so after significantly changing our transportation plan. And City Council tonight is scheduled to vote on allocating $4.3 million to this newly formed Metropolitan Public Transit Authority, which will oversee transit now that we've said yes to the sales tax. They will also run CATS. The vote is tonight. I want to hear from each of you. Where do you stand on that vote? Yes or no? Joy?
Yes.
JD?
I'm not sure, and I'll tell you why. I think, you know, I appreciate the sentiment that we need to put gas in the tank for this authority to go through, and that it's normal practice during accusations or separations of organizations. However, I want to make sure that what we're funding really sets the authority up for standard. And after asking some questions tonight to council and staff about, you know, what this money is going to actually do to ensure that the public is also informed. That's why I'm deciding to do it publicly during the meeting. I think I would support making sure that we're off to the races and ensuring that transit is equitable for everyone in the city.
Putting gas in the tank is Malcolm Graham's phrase, I believe. Mm-hmm. Kim, what's your vote?
I will be voting for it. Again, I have done real estate acquisitions. I've done M&A. I do have a deep appreciation for some of the initial costs that are attendant to making sure myriad contracts get transferred in the right way and that all of the T's are crossed and I's are dotted with respect to this transition. It's a huge lift, and this is quite honestly very necessary funding to get that lift started.
Is this one time only, or will they be coming back to the well every year?
Oh, it'll be iterative, I'm certain. Again, there's a cap budget.
I'm sorry, say that again, Kimberly, you broke up.
I said, I'm sure it will be iterative. It'll be a process as we go through and assess what parts are already allocated to CATS and what needs to come over from that budget into this one. I mean, it's definitely a process that's going to need to be well managed. And as JD said, it's going to need to be communicated so that people understand what we're doing and don't get the wrong idea.
The three of you represent very different districts and very different kinds of people in Charlotte, and their use of transit varies wildly from district to district. Do you think that the plan that we have settled on, and that we were kind of hornswoggled into settling on by the General Assembly, is one that will serve your constituents in your districts? And will they use what comes out of this in the next 10, 20, 30 years? Joy.
I'm hopeful that staff and the new authority are going to be really thoughtful of how we're using the funding to make sure that we're really actually meeting the needs of our residents. When it comes to that 40% roads part, that's something I'm really interested in, as Kimberly was talking about Vision Zero. So with the roads funding, that can also include bike lanes and sidewalk improvements and pedestrian improvements. So that is something I would really challenge the new authority to think through. How are we creating a more walkable city? Yes, 40% is for roads, but that 40% includes more than just physically expanding roads. How do we make the city more walkable?
JD, you represent the side of town that got shortchanged on the Silver Line, if I'm not mistaken. So what's your answer to that question?
And I also ran against the transit sales tax. So it's a unique predicament to be in. I'll say that I hope and I'm optimistic that the transit authority will be flexible to the current plan we have. I think the current plan we have largely leaves out District 5 in East Charlotte. I think we need more buses. We need new bus routes. I think we need an extension of the Silver Line, at least two or three stops into East Charlotte, to ensure that people, this is a district where a lot of folks actually depend on public transit and not cars. And we didn't get much in return. And I think that oftentimes falls on responsive and receptive and engaging representation. And I hope to be engaged throughout this process and ensuring that hopefully the plan we have now is flexible enough to include some more returns for East Charlotte.
And of course, people are concerned about being safe on transit because of the stabbings and the shootings on buses or near buses, et cetera, and just the whole zeitgeist that we're going through right now. On the same day that the three of you took office, IRENA's law went into effect. It calls for tougher law enforcement on a lot of different levels. But those most impacted, the courts, the jails, don't get enough resources out of this, and there's no money for mental health. Councilman Malcolm Graham has made this plea. He said, please, Raleigh, send us some money. Are they listening, Kimberly?
I think that if they don't, they do so at their peril, because I think the better we are at communicating to the people what our priorities are and importantly, what our hurdles are to achieving those priorities. And I'm not trying to suggest that we're just, you know, shoving this off on the legislature, but we are being very honest about those legislative failings. And we're asking people to be very thoughtful in their voting patterns so that they are putting forward people who will be part of a Mecklenburg delegation that will adequately advocate for our interests. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that that message will get out there that we have some constraints, and some of those are of our own state's making.
Kimberly Owens represents District 6 on City Council, the first Democrat to do so in a long time. J.D. Mazura Arias represents District 5 and Joy Mayo, District 3. They're all newly minted. They meet tonight. Big votes coming up tonight on several things. And we never got a chance to talk about affordable housing, but there will come another day that we can do that, because gosh knows we've been talking about it forever. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.